Online at bbc.co.uk/5live. This is the UK's home of live news and live sport.
5 Live.
Loads and loads of emails, Mark, so we need to get down to some business here. Martin on this. According to Tim Dowling in today's Guardian,
yes,
Frank Kermode's Radio 5 Live show is one of the top 25 podcasts available through the iTunes Music Store. Is 5 Live now running a regular literary criticism programme?
Exactly.
Has Frank taken over your weekly book review slot, perhaps? Or is this just one more instance of Professor Frank being confused with your own Dr. Mark?
Can I just say it's particularly galling, since The Guardian's sister paper is The Observer, for whom I write a large full-page arts column.
Yes.
But never mind.
So this is... anyway... It's not Mark Kermode's Radio 5 Live show anyway.
Yes, so A, I'm not Frank Kermode. B, it's not my show. But other than that, good reporting.
The Guardian living up to its reputation.
Yes, corrections and corrigenda.
Certainly true that it's one of the top 20 podcasts, and you can get all the movie reviews downloadable through the 5 Live website and through iTunes as well. This is from Madupi.
Can I just say, incidentally, for the record, what? I am in no way related to Frank Kermode.
Thank you.
Not at all.
Madupi says, can I just say, enjoy your programme very much, especially film reviews with Mark. Anyway, just wanted to ask you if Mark knows why Felicity Huffman in Transamerica was overlooked for a BAFTA nomination. Although I haven't seen it myself, I've heard it's very, very powerful.
It's all right. The film itself has flaws, and her performance is good, but, you know, there is a bunch of other stuff that got nominated. It's not necessarily the case that Golden Globes means BAFTAs nor Oscars.
Chris, in Sutton, Mark's film review spot this afternoon, could you ask him why adverts and trailers for the new film Cock and Bull Story can claim that The Guardian, to mention them again, says it's the best film ever.
Ever, yeah.
Yet Pete Bradshaw in today's paper gives it 3 stars. Do they make these quotes up?
Presumably that quote has come from an article that they've written about it. I thought exactly the same thing. I wonder where that quote comes from. And that's why, usually, when you look for a quote on a movie poster, if it doesn't say Peter Bradshaw, The Guardian, if it just says The Guardian, you may wonder whether it came from the travel section.
Thank you.
Or if it just says Radio 5, it's not necessarily me.
Ahead of the box office top 10, you have to work out from my... This is picking up on our new way of summarising movies, which we started last week.
Oh, yeah.
We just give you a string of words, and you have 100% success rate.
So far.
People remember from last week. You have to work out which film I went to see last weekend.
Okay.
Based on our new way of describing films.
Okay, ready? Go on. Yeah.
And we haven't sorted this out.
And it's something that's currently in release.
Not telling you.
Okay, fine.
Okay. Sheep, snow, more sheep. Ooh, ouch. Lost shirt, found shirt.
Sheep, snow.
Sheep, snow, more sheep. Ooh, ouch. Lost shirt, found shirt. Very significant shirt. Okay, it's in the box office top 10.
I'm complete... Oh, hang on, let me have a look. Brokeback Mountain?
Yes.
Well, what's the ooh, ouch?
I'd really rather not say.
Oh, I see. Oh, that. Fine. Okay, fine. And moving swiftly on. Thank you very much, Simon. Yes.
Lost shirt? Yes. Significance of the shirt?
Yeah. Okay,
come
fine.
Come on.
Sorry, but I have to say, they have gone out of their way to say that it's not a gay Western, but describing it as sheep, snow, lost shirt, found...
Martin in Manchester, this is my favourite email of the day. Simon, I'm not surprised Ang Lee has cheesed off that people keep calling Brokeback Mountain a gay cowboy movie. I've seen it. He's right. It's not a gay cowboy movie. It's a gay shepherd movie.
Yeah,
do these film critics know nothing about livestock, so that's the way it should be described.
They don't call them shepherds in America, they call them cowhands, even if they're not cows.
Number 10 this week, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
You know, good, but not as good as Azkaban.
Match Point at 9.
I think it's all over the place. I don't quite understand everyone else fawning over it.
Cheaper by the Dozen 2 at 8.
Steve Martin's career resurrection begins this week, or does it, with Shop Girl, in which he makes amends for Cheaper by the Dozen 2.
Just Like Heaven at 7.
Just Like Hell on Earth.
Memoirs of a Geisha at 6.
Looks nice. Haven't got any problem with the Chinese-Malaysian cast, but it is a completely Hollywood movie. Don't go there expecting authentic Japanese culture.
King Kong at 5.
I think you get your money's worth. You don't like the ice skating. Huh, what do you know, particularly after that description of Brokeback Mountain?
I think you'll find it was pretty darn good.
Okay.
The aforementioned Brokeback Mountain at 4.
Yeah, sheep, snow, lost shirt.
Ouch. Significant shirt.
Very significant shirt. Yeah.
Just Friends at 3.
It's, you know, James King liked it, but he's obviously too young to have developed a critical faculty.
By the way, if you want to test Mark with similar summaries of well-known movies, Mayor.
Well, my success rate can only go down from 100%. Now it's down to 90%, so it's just going to get worse.
The Chronicles of Narnia, number 2, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
Up for a few technical BAFTAs, but nothing else, and that's kind of what I expected.
And still with the ouch, the Jarhead at number 1.
Yeah, well, I'm not wowed by Jarhead. I think it's, you know, Full Metal Jacket and only Full Metal Jacket light and a bit of Apocalypse Now and a bit of the Deer Hunter. But it did, however, provoke my Deer Hunter rant, which has started a discussion on the IMDb about whether or not the Deer Hunter is as hateful as I thought it was, and I'm glad of having done it just for that.
Film reviews. We should start with The Cock and Bull Story, which, if you're a Guardian reader, is slightly confusing. It's either the best film ever, only worth 3 stars. What's it to be, Mark?
Well, I'm closer to the first one of those. Adaptation of a famous unfilmable 18th century novel, The Life and Opinions of Tristram Shandy, Gentleman. Re-team Steve Coogan with director Michael Winterbottom, because they did 24-hour Party People together, which, as we have discussed at some length, is absolutely fabulous and features one of Andy Serkis's great performances as Martin Hannett. In the novel, the narrator is attempting to sort of tell his life story, but keeps getting sidetracked, firstly by the impossibility of telling his own life story, and secondly by the impossibility of writing the novel, which, of course, is episodic anyway. In the film, what happens is that Steve Coogan is playing Tristram Shandy and Tristram Shandy's father, but keeps getting sidetracked away from actually being in the film by, on the one hand, a rival with Rob Brydon, who is his co-star in the movie and is apparently very well known from television. He's from...
Indeed so.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't seen him before, but apparently he's very well known.
He's from loads of things.
Well, there we go.
And he's very good.
Okay. Who keeps threatening to steal the show. Also, journalists who keep turning up on set and interviewing Steve Coogan as the character Steve Coogan about infidelities that he's had in his life, which, of course, is particularly pertinent considering the real-life accusations of infidelities which have dogged and, to some extent, been accepted by Steve Coogan in the real world, and by the reputation that he has for always being Alan Partridge, which in the film he plays Steve Coogan attempting to put Alan Partridge behind him, which becomes particularly self-reflexive in a moment in the film in which Steve Coogan, the character, is interviewed by Tony Wilson, who he played in 24-Hour Party People, basically as Alan Partridge.
Can we start with knowing me, Tony Wilson, knowing you, Steve Coogan? How is that?
Let's rise above that, shall we?
Okay, you're right.
It's just, you know, it's just something that the TV series did a long time ago, and I'm trying to, like... Yeah, sort of change the record. You know.
All right, okay, sorry, my fault. I did Rob yesterday, yeah. And he does a fantastic impersonation of you.
They said, well, you've got to make it like Steve Coogan. Well, Steve, no matter what he's doing, is basically, oh, you're so dirty. I mean, that's basically whether he's Walter, whether he's Tristram, whether he's Steve or he's Alan Partridge, it all boils down to that. Steve's hero is Roger Moore. And Roger Moore's style of acting is not a million miles away from Steve's.
Steve Coogan, why Tristram Shandy? This is the book that many people say is unfilmable.
I think that's the attraction. Tristram Shandy was a postmodern classic written before there was any modernism to be posed about. So it's way ahead of its time, and in fact, for those who haven't heard of it, it was actually listed as number 8 on the Observer's top 100 books of all time.
That was a chronological list.
Right.
Now, I know, the whole film?
No, listen, I know it's a long clip, but I want to play the whole thing because you have to get a sense of it. Because on the one hand, there's the film itself. On the other hand, there's the interviews, which appear... those aren't from outtakes. Those are in the film, although even as they're playing in the film, a thing says the rest of these will appear on the deleted outtake section of the DVD. So you get the acting and the... You get several levels of reality. And it sounds like it ought to be so postmodern and so self-reflexive that it has completely disappeared up itself. It's actually really, really... really good. Couple of reasons. First is that Michael Winterbottom, when he's great, he's 24-Hour Party People and he's this. When he's bad, it's 9 songs and, you know, Butterfly Kiss and that awful adaptation of Jude the Obscure. And it's like he's a schizophrenic personality. But when he's good, he really, really hits the nail on the head. And this time, I think it's up there with 24-Hour Party People as one of his best works. The script is by Martin Hardy. Now, interesting, according to reports in Variety, so I trust this is true, Martin Hardy is actually Frank Cottrell Boyce, having taken his name off the script. But Frank Cottrell Boyce is quoted as saying that he didn't take his name off the script because he didn't like it. He took it off the script because he wanted to to part the ways with Michael Winterbottom, and what better way than to leave him with his best script for free? I mean, it all sounds so weird. You can't tell how much of it is true and how much of it isn't true.
It was difficult. I mean, Rob and Steve were both on the programme about 10 days ago, and it was quite difficult to get a handle on anything other than the fact that they seem to really enjoy working with each other and intend to carry on doing so in the future. And that's
well,
about it.
The thing is, it would be very easy to look at the film and think that what it is a bunch of improvisation and all these just outtakes jumbled up together in a way which is quite entertaining. But in fact, it has that shambolic structure that bespeaks real thought. I mean,
bespeaks.
Yes,
does it?
Bespeaks it. Don't pick me up on bespeaks. Bespeaks. That's a perfectly fine. Okay, fine. Send the emails in now that prove that it's perfectly fine. You look it up on.
I'm sure it did. No, I'm sure okay, it fine. I'm sure it
Which there. Bespeaks real organisational brain behind the thing. Because, like French Lieutenant's Woman,
so it
means
the same as speaks of, does it?
Yes, but it's slightly more elegant. Okay. It's like the thing.
It's show offy.
It's not show offy. What's wrong with bespeaks?
Carry on.
I'm completely lost the threader. No, I haven't. Okay, fine. So, it's like in The French Lieutenant's Woman, which you've got the story and then the narrator commenting at the story at the same time. In terms of the film, what you've got is the story of Tristram Shandy being untold by Steve Coogan and everyone else in the film production being unable to make the film work and constantly getting sidetracked. Steve Coogan too often gets put down as somebody, as Rob Brydon's saying in that in that clip, somebody who is just simply Alan Partridge. The fact is, he's a great actor. Two things. Firstly, he's very, very willing to take the mick out of himself. Look at this. Look at his performance in Coffee and Cigarettes, in which he plays a snot-nosed British actor who goes to L.A. and then is rude to Alfred Molina until the point that he discovers that Alfred Molina is good friends with Spike Jones, at which point he tries to be his friend. It's very hard to play something that, you know, apparently damaging to your own personality because people look at it and think that you are playing yourself. In this, he's doing a number of different parts that all look worryingly similar from the outside, but in fact, when you look at them closely, are all very, very well modulated. Of course he's not Alan Partridge, but playing somebody who is dogged by the ghost of Alan Partridge, who is then interviewed by Tony Wilson and is co-starred with somebody who keeps mocking him for being nothing other than Alan Partridge, is not the same as just being Alan Partridge. I mean, it's incredibly intelligent, it's incredibly funny, it's a very smart way of doing an absolutely unfilmable novel, and it's rip-roaringly entertaining. I mean, I was genuinely knocked out by how good it was. I am sure, as some people have said, that it may be a little too much of an in-joke, and it may be that if you have no interest in the making of movies, if you have no interest in the process of making movies, if you have no interest in the process of a work of art being created, then you might find it annoying. But then you would find the novel annoying as well, because so much of the novel is about that. It's in the BAFTAs, in the Best British Film category, it's up against Wallace and Gromit, Curse of the Were-Rabbit, and I would say it's a neck-and-neck tie from my point of view, because I thought they were both great movies, you know, fantastically well-performed, and a real credit to the British film industry. I thought Cock and Bull Story was great, and hats off to them for doing such a good job with such a difficult book.
What you would really like about Rob Brydon,
yes,
in his back catalogue,
does he say bespeak?
He does he did a TV series called Director's Commentary,
right?
In which they bought up proper television programs like High Chaparral, and then he is this character called Peter Delane, and he adds on a completely made up director's commentary.
Oh, okay.
It's absolutely
fantastic, very good,
and you'll love it.
Okay.
With our new movie game, Steve, now these are quite tricky. I think your record's going to go
downhill.
Yeah,
I know. I think
downhill.
Last week was a fluke. It's going to go downhill now. Go on.
I'll tell you, this is current top 10 movie.
So you're going to bespeak them to me.
Andy Bradshaw. One shot, one kill, ouch. I've got another ouch. I've got sand in my eyes.
One shot, one kill, ouch.
I've got
sand in my eyes.
That's the clue at the end, I think. Sand? No,
why is that a clue? No.
That's Jarhead.
Oh, come on!
He says, I've seen worse war films, Thin Red Line, to name one, abomination, in the opinion of...
But there isn't a kill I'm not giving the game away, but I mean, it's the whole point of Jarhead, is that he goes and he doesn't.
Len, on this, guess the film. Milk, violence, milk, more violence, even more violence, salvation, violence, politicians, violence, more violence, the end.
Do it again.
No, that's Clockwork Orange, that one.
Yeah, okay.
Simon Pawley.
I'm going to have a complete... Yeah, go on.
I wonder if Mark can identify which Hollywood actor does the following in almost all
blink,
films.
Blink, 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 blink. Richard Gere.
Nope. Smug, angry, smug, smug, angry. Athletic, angry, angry, smug, 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 angry, smug.
Well, is that in the order in which he does them in the films?
This is a summary. We've moved on. Already the genre has mutated. Okay, this is an entire back catalogue of a well-known actor.
Smug, angry.
Angry, smug, angry, athletic, angry, smug, angry, smug. The answer, because
Bruce Willis, isn't it?
It's Tom Cruise.
Oh, well, he's not smug, yeah. Well, yeah, I know. Well, which one of those in that case was Eyes Wide Shut?
That's just what it is.
Smug.
Okay. This from Paul. He says, Simon and Mark, if I can put this King Kong ice skating malarkey to bed once and for all.
Yeah.
The reason that the ice doesn't break when Kong skates on it is the pond is only a couple of feet deep and the ice is frozen
all
solid
the way through.
And thus easily able to support the big ape. It's not the fact that the ice doesn't break. It's the fact that they're ice skating with an ape at all, with Christmas trees. It's just ridiculous. At that point, it's time to go. Anyway, we're only done one movie.
Yeah, no, let's belt on. Okay, so Shop Girl, touted as being Steve Martin's return to form after the horrors of Cheaper by the Dozen 2, based on a very mawkish novella, one would imagine. I haven't read the novel, but I've seen the film, about a girl working at Saks Fifth Avenue who is wooed, on the one hand, by a sort of stoner teenager character with no money and no hope and a bit smelly, and on the other hand, by a rich 50s businessman who's clearly got no intention of committing, he's got lots of money, but apparently no heart. Steve Martin wrote the script and stars as the 50-year-old rich guy with not much heart who gets basically to drool all over Claire Danes.
Was I boring?
No. Was I?
A little bit.
Well, okay.
I don't think that you should come in.
I'm not asking to.
Meaning?
I'll see you again.
Oh. Okay.
I'll be out of town about a week, but would you like to have dinner on Friday? We could eat at my place.
Okay.
Unbelievably not a clip of Dawn of the Dead, but it's a clip of Steve Martin doing his most vibrant and upbeat acting. I mean, it's just, okay, Claire Danes is okay, and, you know, it's any film that she's in, she has a certain thing that she brings to it.
What is that thing?
Is that she has presence. It's really odd, but she genuinely has screen presence. However, it's very hard to believe that she finds it that hard to get a date, because she looks like Claire Danes. Jason Schwartzman is okay as the stoner character, although it's really hard to believe that he gets a date with Claire Danes. Steve Martin is just plain creepy. I mean, he just looks like a really weird, wizened, old, creepy guy who has made the moves on this girl who is young enough to be his daughter, who does drooling all over girl who is young enough to be his daughter, whose buttocks we get to see in naked close-up for reasons which really have yet to be explained, does an awful lot of sitting on a private plane, staring at a glass of wine, and narrating the movie. Now, the reason that he narrates the movie is because his face can no longer move, and consequently, you have to have Steve telling you what's going on in his head. And so you get this voice saying, he feels unhappy as he looks out of the window.
I don't like narrated movies anyway.
No, well, exactly. And believe me, you're not going to like this one anymore. I just don't get it with Steve Martin. He's a man who appears to have had his sense of humour completely removed. And we know that at one point he was a great, great humorist and a great musician and somebody who was really, really good in movies. I thought there was something really sleazy and tacky and grim about his character. At one point, his character pays off Claire Danes' student loans. And rather than going, you're a stalker, she goes, oh, that's so sweet of you. You go, no, that's not. That's a money for affection transaction. How come people in this movie aren't standing up and going, stay away from the reptile character with the white hair? And the reason they're not is because the reptile character with the white hair wrote the movie. So, you know, I don't get it. I don't think it's a return to form. Yes, obviously it's better than Cheaper by the Dozen 2, but hey, what isn't? Moving on, however.
Is this my new best friend?
Yes. Get Rich or Die Trying with Fiddy Sense, okay? I was going to play you a clip, but a shorter time. Anyway, no, you had him on, and I think okay, basically, the story is, well, you'd know this better than I do. The story is apparently based 75% on his life. He plays a character called Little Caesar, who is, you know, from the streets, and he has all this bad stuff going on in his life. You know, his mother's a drug dealer and a prostitute.
We can play a clip.
You want to play a clip?
Yeah,
it's very okay. Here's a clip.
So what do you do?
I'm a gangster.
No, really, what do you do?
I'm a rapper.
Seriously, Marcus, what do you do?
I'm a gangster rap. Marcus is the gangster's rapper that he is.
I think Oscar Wilde worked as a script consultant briefly on it, but only passingly.
That was not as good as our brief interview.
Okay, so, look, it's set in streetwise, urban, young black America. So, who can get to direct it? I know. Let's get that old white Irish guy who did In the Name of the Father and My Left Foot, because he's
Jim
down.
Sheridan.
Yeah, you know, so, A, very, very peculiar choice of director. It's described by some nitwit on the poster as 8 Mile with attitude. 8 Mile had attitude. This 8 Mile without the interest, without the story, without the character arc, without, you know, it's not 8 Mile. I mean, in its wildest dreams, it's not 8 Mile. Terrence Howard co-stars, and watching this, I was suddenly made aware of what a masterpiece Hustle and Flow was, despite how much I hated Hustle and Flow. At least Hustle and Flow looked like a film that was trying to do something. Apparently, the message of the film is, you know, one has to have self-belief and all those things to get, you know, put things behind you. Well, apparently that's what the message of the film was. Actually, I thought the message of the film that I saw was, you know, it's really not a good idea to go around shooting people in the head, but it's a perfectly good idea to get your friends to do it for you so that you can then go on to be a rapper. I mean, I don't get it. It's a bad film. It stars somebody who cannot even play himself. And there's a lovely bit of trivia about it, which says that apparently Jim Sheridan said to 50 Cent that he didn't need an acting trainer, because he said, if this fails, it won't be because you can't act. It's because I didn't direct you right. Well, Jim, you know, insert punchline of your own choice.
Tim Robey in The Telegraph today, he said something like, well done to Mr. Cent for adding something else to the list of things he can't do. So he's not. This doesn't bode well for his future acting career, then.
Well, I don't think he needs an acting career. I mean, he's clearly got a very hot pop career as it is. And the fact is, it may be that in the future. I mean, here's a very good example. You look at somebody like Ice Cube. When Ice Cube was first seen on screen, nobody thought he was going to turn out to be somebody who actually was a good actor. And not only that, somebody who's quite an interesting director. But in this case, it's all too self-glamorized and self-mythologizing, and it ends up saying absolutely nothing, but saying it at great length.
Quick piece of correspondence from Mark in Nottingham. It's a huge long rant about people talking in films.
Yeah, horrible.
Are people these days totally unable to keep quiet for the duration of a single film? I can't believe anyone who talks during a film has anything so earth-shatteringly important to say he won't jeopardise the continuing existence of the human race if they wait until the credits roll. I can understand if it's a kids' movie, but when I do go to kids' movies like The Incredible Sky High Narnia, I'm willing to put up with a few mutterings, but most of the time, they've been the best behaved. Personally, the only conversation acceptable during a film is, excuse me, I don't mean to bother you, but you seem to be on fire. Oh, very sorry, I'll put myself out now. I hope it didn't distract you too much from the film. So my question for Mark is, what is the correct response to people talking during a film? I'm torn between the two extremes. A, sit quietly and ignore them, so as not to disturb the other patrons. B, cut out the tongue and nail it to the cinema wall as an example. I'm sure the correct course of action is somewhere between the two, but I can't work it out.
Well, you know, my stance on this is you wouldn't talk in church. You don't do it in a cinema. And I'm not being, you know, just fatuous about that. Seriously, cinema is a form of church. You wouldn't talk in church. Just don't do it. It's disrespectful and sacrilegious. Don't do it.
85058 mayo@bbc.co.uk. Try and do a few more on our movie game before the end, but we've got another Jim Carrey movie.
Very good. Fun with Dick and Jane, which is yet another unnecessary remake of a film that was perfectly all right in the 70s. Remember, we had The Longest Yard, and that's been remade twice, most recently with Adam Sandler, and there was no point in remaking that as either The Mean Machine or The Longest Yard. Now Fun with Dick and Jane. The original had George Segal and Jane Fonda. Now we get Jim Carrey and Tia Leone. And the story is Dick and Jane are upcoming American yuppies, and then something terrible happens to the company they're on. The company goes all Enron. Dick loses his job. Jane doesn't have a job. They both have to try and get different jobs. So there's many japes ensuing as they try to get a job in a supermarket. And then Jane attempts to become an aerobics instructor. And then finally, after you've been there forever, they start robbing places, which is actually the thing that I remember most from the other one. But it takes an awfully long time to get there. Apparently, both Barry Sonnenfeld and Cameron Diaz were signed to the project at some point and both bowed out. And one would believe that they bowed out because they'd read the script. Alec Baldwin is the only good thing about the film. Alec Baldwin plays the slimy executive chief of the company, which collapses, thereby leaving Dick and Jane in the doo-doo. But every time I see Alec Baldwin, all I think about is Team America World Police and that thing. You can't fight with him. He's the best actor in the world. And actually, he is clearly the best actor in Fun with Dick and Jane. Yeah. I've got more, but I mean, you have.
Okay, quick quiz. This is from Mark in Cardiff. Scientific experimentation, Short teleportation, insect mutation.
The fly.
Yeah, that's good. Next review.
Okay, Underworld Evolution. Why does a sequel to Underworld exist? Okay, A, well, the first one took a lot of money. Well, it wasn't any good. B, director Len Wiseman is married to Kate Beckinsale and clearly likes looking at her in rubber. And C, lots of other people do as well. So now we have Underworld Evolution, which, why didn't they show it to us before this very, very late press screening? Okay, it was only just press screened. Was it because A, it wasn't finished? B, they were worried about piracy.
Another quiz.
C,
I love quizzes.
It wasn't any good at all.
I'll go for C.
Even for people who like looking at Kate Beckinsale in leather, which presumably includes the director because, you know, they're conjoined. It's rubbish. It's a vampire and leather movie that never, never, never raised a flicker of interest, which really, for me, is saying something.
Movie of the week.
By quite some distance, A Cock and Bull Story. And I would say it's already one of my contenders for best British film of the year and possibly will end up in the top 10 of best film of the year. It's really good.
Our final minute. Watch this film. This is Jay and King's Lynn. Whisper, whisper, space, worm, sand, sand.
Dune.
Spice.
Dune.
Where did the story go?
Yeah, Dune.
Dune.
Which incidentally has been given away by a leading national newspaper this week. I mean, they can't give it away.
Okay, what's this? Wrong, 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 wrong and wrong. That's Mark Kermode predicting the Oscars.
Okay, yeah, and that's fair comment.
From Sam in Reading, car crash, depression, fraud, attempted suicide, ringing bell.
Car crash, depression.
It's a Wonderful Life. By the way, Peter Reeve in Market Harbour says, according to dictionary.com, bespeaks, as Mark has just used it, is archaic. Need we say more?
Well, I am archaic, and I'm proud of it. Podcast me now.
It's all available on the 5 Live website. You can download and listen all over again.
Frank Kermode's movie reviews.
Should you wish to. Go to the 5 Live website and follow the instructions. Have a great weekend. We're back on Monday at 1, and Drive is next on AM, on digital and online. This is 5 Live.